As we continue our study this morning in the review section of our lesson number 15 on page 63, we are down to the section where we're asking the question, where did the following events take place? You'll notice that on page, 65? Okay, page 65. Where did the following events take place? Where God spoke directly to the people, Exodus chapter 20. Where was that? Joey, you remember? As they came out, they came down into Sinai, to Mount Sinai, where he spoke directly to the people. Then number two, Joshua led the people through the river on dry land. Through the river on dry land. Lynn, where is that? The Jordan River. That's right. The Jordan River. And then number three, Pharaoh's army drowned. Where did they drown, Bruce? In the Red Sea. We talked about that Wednesday night regarding the location of the crossing. And, of course, we've looked at alternate routes for the crossing of the Red Sea, whether it was the Gulf of Suez or the Gulf of Aqaba. And we'll leave that for those who know a whole lot more than I do to discuss the details of that. The people built a golden calf to worship in Exodus chapter 22. They called upon Aaron to do so. He asked them for their gold, claimed that he put it in the fire and out walked this calf. Where was that? All right, at the base of Mount Sinai. And again, dependent upon whether Sinai is in what we commonly refer to as the Sinai Peninsula or if it's over here in the Arabian Desert, which I would call your attention to Galatians chapter 4 as you study that issue. Moses went into the mountain for 40 days. Where was it? Mount Sinai, once again, whether or not in the Sinai Peninsula or further east, we'll leave that there because our book takes this position, and I find it difficult to be extremely dogmatic. Moses put a tree into the water to make it sweet. Exodus chapter 15, verses 23 through 25. Again, where was that? All right, Marah. And then number seven, the earth swallowed up Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Again, the exact location is not known, but where was that? All right, the wilderness of Paran in Kadesh Barnea. And again, the question is, as we were talking in our study Wednesday night, whether or not Kadesh Barnea is here or perhaps moved a bit further over east. The location not exactly known. It borders on Edom on the west side or on the south side. So either route that you take for the Exodus and the period of wandering, Kadesh Barnea would border Edom. The events there, of course, are the things that we want to emphasize in our study. Aaron died, Numbers chapter 20. Where did Aaron die? All right, Mount Hor. And then number 9, Moses held his rod over his head while the Israelites fought a battle in Exodus chapter, chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. Yeah, that's wrong on the chart, I believe. Where was it? All right, Rephidim. Number 10, the manna began in Exodus chapter 15. Where did God give them manna to eat? All right, the wilderness of Sin after Elam, and then the manna ended. We want to make special note of that. Where did the manna end? All right, in Gilgal, when they came into the promised land. Now keep in mind, how long has that been? 40 years, long time to eat the same thing, isn't it? Over and over and over. But God provided for them, and they had nourishment. Number 12. There were 70 palm trees and 12 springs of water, Exodus chapter 15. Where was it? Elam. All right, Elam. Number 13, they built a tabernacle. Where was it? Mount Sinai. And again, of course, the argument of the location of Mount Sinai, east or west, and we'll leave that. Where was it that the fiery serpents built? Where was it the fiery serpents bit the people? All right, there in Edom's edge, Numbers chapter 21, what did God do when the people cried out about the fiery snakes? Did he remove the serpents? No. What did he do? All right, he provided the means whereby the snake bites might be healed. They could look upon the brazen serpent that Moses had prepared on the pole. Number 15, Miriam and Aaron complained against Moses in Numbers chapter 11. Where was that? Hazeroth, that's right. All right, number 16, where the spies were sent into Canaan. Numbers 13, and you also want to remember this in connection with Numbers 14. Numbers 13 and 14, spies sent in. Where was it? From Kadesh Barnea. Now again, the location, whether it's here or whether it's just over here, we've still got the spies being sent in from Kadesh Barnea, and when they went in, what did they find out about the land? How did they report? All right, inhabited by large people. Inhabited by giants, they said. And what about the produce of the land? Beautiful produce. In fact, how would we illustrate that? All right, the large cluster of grapes, that's right, carried on a pole between the shoulders of two men. Where did God send in quail for a month? All right. Say that again. Yeah, what you said. That's the place. Okay? And that's in Numbers chapter 11, verses 4 through 34. Yeah, you say that so well. It's almost like you've been there. Their starting point from Egypt. Where did they leave? Ramesses. That's right. Exodus 12, 37. Number 19. They went 3 days without water. Exodus 15. All right. In the wilderness of Shur. That's right. Fire broke out in the camp. Tabra. Why? What were they doing? Murmuring. That's right. Complaining. Number 21, Balaam tried to curse the people. Numbers 21 through 24. Where was that? The plains of Moab. Yes, we know where Moab was. And why did Balaam try to curse the people? King Balak asked him to. What had Balak seen that caused him to want that done? All right, he's seen all these folks destroyed, or the Israelites destroy these people, and so he wanted the Israelites to be cursed. Well, what was Balaam's first response? Can't do it. But before they talked him into it, he said, let me go talk to God and see what God says, because you see, I can't do anything more or less than what God says. Now, on the surface, that sounds right and honorable, and Balak sent more noble princes than the first to ask him again. And then what did Balaam do? Let me go ask one more time. Let me go ask one more time. Had God said all he had to say on that? Well, yeah. It didn't change. What God's will on the matter was the same. God hadn't changed his mind. But yet we see that Balaam comes back with the report that God says, I can go now, but I still can't say anything more or less than what God has said. And every time that Balaam attempted to curse the people, David, what happened? All right, he wound up blessing them. He couldn't curse them. He wound up blessing the people. And then finally, what did Balaam do? He told Balak something that would be devastating to the people of God. How to tempt them to sin. Yeah. Send in the Midianite and the Moabite women. Because you see, they are not to take these heathen women. And you send them in, and what happened? 24,000 committed fornication with these women and died. And so Balak got his wish, at least it seems at first.
Not somebody who
All right. Balaam for hire, I believe is how Jude puts it. And it's interesting that he words it that way because that's what he was. He sold his convictions. And he kept trying and trying and trying until finally he was able to accomplish what he desired. Very good. Number 22. The men born in the wilderness were circumcised. Joshua chapter 5. Now keep in mind, we've got a period here of about 40 years that have lapsed since they came up out of the land of Egypt, and now they are entering into the promised land or preparing to do so. And there are kids that have been born in this wilderness that have not been circumcised. And so this was a great day for these people. Where was it? All right, it occurred at Gilgal after they crossed over the Jordan River. In verse 23, the first Canaanite cities destroyed. Numbers chapter 21. The first of the Canaanite cities destroyed. Where was it? Hormah. That's right. Very good. Number 24, Moses struck the rock in obedience to God's command in Exodus chapter 17. Where was it? Rephidim. That's right. Now, we want to also note that Moses struck the rock in disobedience to God's command. Where was that? Pardon me? All right. It was called, the waters were called Meribah. That's right, which means strife in Numbers chapter 20. In Kadesh, the wilderness of Zin, is where that occurred. On their way to the wilderness of Paran. Alright. Number 26. Very good. Moses gave a series of speeches warning the people to be faithful to God. Beginning in Deuteronomy. Where is it? Alright, Edom's Edge. Now, as Moses left from the giving of these speeches, where was he eventually led and what happened to him? Upon Mount Nebo, and he died. That's right. Did not get to go in. Very good. Number 27, they were told they would have to wander for 40 years. Numbers 13 and 14, where was it? Kadesh. All right. Almost there. Yes, almost there. But now we've got 38 additional years. Because they did not believe God, the Hebrew writer tells us. And where is that? Hebrews what? Bruce? All right, Hebrews 4, the latter part of chapter 3 and the first few verses of chapter 4. Very good. Number 28, they made a covenant with God. Exodus chapter 19, the people of Israel made a covenant with God. All right, Mount Sinai, down at the edge of Mount Sinai, Moses tells them, here are the conditions. And they said, the commandments and statutes that God has given, we will do. They said that at least three times. We will do. And so they make a covenant with God. Number 29, they counted the soldiers. And our writer tells us the first time. They counted the soldiers. Where? At Mount Sinai. That's right. And again, the question of its location here or just over here in Arabia, we want to keep raising that question for your study. In number 30, they counted the new generation in Numbers chapter 26. Down in the plains of Moab, that's right, the plains of Moab. And then Moses died, Mount Nebo, that's right, and that's in Deuteronomy chapter 34. All right. How did we do on the locating of these places? Everybody make 100? 100%? Everybody did do this, right? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, okay? This is a great help, I think. David, I appreciate your efforts because I know that the artwork that David's doing, you need to look at his artwork, by the way. David is an artiste. He's drawing these in precisely. Anyway, we'll move right along. Here depicts the typical route that they took into the promised land. This depicts Moses on Mount Nebo. before the children of Israel go in and take the land under the leadership of Joshua. This map in particular depicts an alternate route that Steve Rudd, who is the author of this website, you might go on there and look at his reasons. Some of them are compelling. And note that there are at least four possible crossings that are noted in his study. And why he in particular takes this position, but nonetheless locates Sinai over here instead of over there, and the wilderness of Sinai over here instead of over here, and Kadesh over here instead of over there. And those are some of the major changes that this alternate crossing yields in the study. So you might like to research that a little bit more on your own. I would say this, it makes some very interesting reading and some very interesting study, but word of caution, you can get caught up in some of the interesting reading and lose the purpose of why you're reading it. So that's one of the reasons we've not tried to debate these points. You'll find, some compelling arguments if you want to study this further, but we don't want to, or I don't want to use our class time to debate it. Now, as you work on these lessons, I ask you to Wednesday night to read into the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua, because the book of Joshua discusses the conquest of the land. I have in times gone by called upon students in classes to read from the book of Joshua, only to find that there are some who have said, no, I didn't read that. And I asked, why not? And they said, well, it's too bloody. They became weary of reading of all of the battles. Well, keep in mind, this is a period in the history of Israel where God gives them the land, but it's conditioned upon them taking the land. And you would expect to be reading about battles when you're studying the period of the conquest of the land. And I especially want you to note as you study through this, and even in the instructions that were given unto Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 7, for example, they were not to make covenants with the inhabitants of the land. What were they to do? Kill them all. Kill them all. Man, woman, child, kill everything. And there was a reason for that. And what was the reason for that? All right. They won't influence you. You won't then be worshiping their idols. And we're going to study, time permitting this morning, how that they began to make covenants with the inhabitants of the land unto their own detriment. Yes, Randy? Well, that's right. That's exactly right. When we look back in Genesis chapter 15, when God was speaking to Abraham, one of the reasons that they're inheriting the land would be 400 years down the pike was because the iniquity of the Amorite was not yet full. The wickedness of these people had reached, as you say, a breaking point. That's right. Something's to be done. Now it's time to punish them. And God's punishment was to be meted out. And Joshua and his army were to be the folks to mete it out, not make covenants with them. All right, Richard? All right. Well, that's a very good observation. That's right.
That's why all these battles.
Yeah.
Go in and say, okay, here we are. Everybody ran away and lived in their houses in peace.
Didn't work that way. No, it didn't work that way. Again, for emphasis' sake, some of you were not here Wednesday night. Putting these events in chronological order on a timeline, you would not expect to find huge gaps on the timeline. You would expect to find a sequence of events according to what Stephen writes, or Stephen says, Luke records for us in Acts chapter 7, as Stephen makes his defense that history beginning with Abraham, Genesis chapter 12, in Acts chapter 7. And I call that to your attention because we find that the time is beginning to be fulfilled, Stephen says, while the Israelites are growing and multiplying in Egypt. So you would not expect to find thousands of years between the fulfillment of the nation promise and the land promise, as some contend today that that promise was not fulfilled and is going to be fulfilled sometime down toward the second coming of the Lord. That's simply not so. The sequence of events are established not only in the history that's related by Stephen in Acts chapter 7, but also in this Old Testament history. When you look at Deuteronomy, and back up to Deuteronomy chapter 31, Deuteronomy chapter 31, and then Deuteronomy 34, and then Joshua 1, we see this sequence. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, you'll note beginning in verse 14, Deuteronomy 31, verse 14. And Jehovah said unto Moses, Behold, thy days approach that thou must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may give him charge. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting. And Jehovah appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud rather stood over the door. And Jehovah said unto Moses, Behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers. What's about to happen to Moses? He's going to die. Now in verse 23. And he gave Joshua, son of Nun, charge and said, Be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt bring this children, of Israel into the land which I swear unto them, and I will be with thee. Do you see a changing of the guard taking place here? During the life of Moses, before he dies, God says to Moses, you're going to die. And now to Joshua, you're going to lead. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 34, Joshua dies there upon Mount Nebo. Pardon me? Moses. What did I say, Joshua? No, Moses dies. You got to know what I'm going to say, not what I said. All right? In Deuteronomy chapter 34, Moses dies. In Joshua chapter 1, Joshua leads. Look, if you will, beginning at verse 1, and Randy, I need a reader, if you would please, down through verse 9. 1 through 9. All right, Lynn, describe for me verse 4, the land that God is identifying to Joshua. Look, if you will, at verse 4. From the wilderness to where? This Lebanon. See where that is? Right, way up here to the north. What's next identified? The Euphrates River. Now, that's off our map. It'd be back over here. And you'll read about the Euphrates and the promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. And he says, all the land of the Hittites and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun. Where's that land? That's right here. The great sea. Now look further, if you will. Shall be your border. Hold your finger there at verse 4 and turn the page back to Deuteronomy chapter 34. And Terry, if you can help me identify some of these places. Verse 1. All right, here we are. All right, that identifies us. Here's Jericho. Here's Mount Nebo. All right, hold up right there. Where's Gilead? Right here. And Dan is... Wait, there it is. No, that's Dor. Where's Dan? I don't see it on this map. It may be off this map. Let me find a better map. I thought I had one right there. There we go. Is that more better, as Richard says? Here's Dan. All right, keep going. Okay, this is not broken up like that, but that's okay. Keep going. All right, here's Judah down here, the sea, and Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph. They got their part, one on one side, one on the other, as I recall. And what else? All right. Zoar is where? Right about there, near Sodom and Gomorrah, at the southern tip of the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea. Now, this is what Moses saw. And when you look at Joshua chapter 1, what is it that Joshua sees or is identified? Same land. Same land. All right, now what's Joshua going to do with it? Verse 6. All right, he's to take it. Thou shalt cause this people to inherit the land. What land? Which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Now that's the land that Moses saw, remember? Look back over at verse 4 of Deuteronomy 34. And Jehovah said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it to thy seed. The connection here is obvious. We've got to connect the land that Moses saw with the land that Joshua was to take. That's right. That's right, and that's very significant, this time frame, the timeline, the sequence of events. God told Abraham in the fourth generation, 430 years, this is going to happen. Not 35,000 or 3,500 or 35,000 for that matter. Not way down the pike somewhere, but in the fourth generation. And that's where Stephen put it in Acts chapter 7. Now, does everybody see the relevance of that? Yes? We've got to see the relevance of that, because that knocks a big old hole in the premillennial theory that all of this is going to happen at the second coming of Christ, a mass transportation of Jews to the land of Palestine. Not going to happen.
Well,
Not there yet, but yes. Joshua 21, Joshua 23, then Joshua 24. But before we get there, we're going to look at Joshua 11. So we're heading there. Okay, he's excited about getting to the conclusion. Okay. All right, the conquest of the land. Who lived in the land? Well, back during the days of Moses, Deuteronomy chapter 7, it was the Hittite, the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Who lived there during the time of Abraham, Genesis chapter 15? You can say that again real quick, Chris. You just jar down on that. That's who was there. Genesis chapter 15, beginning about verse 18. That's who was there during the time that Moses is leading the people. In Deuteronomy chapter 7 and in verse 1. And this is the land that they were to take. Okay? Look further, if you will. Our book goes into greater detail on this than I really care to, because I'm like Randy. I'm anxious to get into Joshua and discuss the conquering of the land. But these tribes were descendants through Ham, the son, descendants of Ham through his son Canaan. And they lived closely with the descendants of Shem in the Fertile Crescent of Arabia. We said all that to say this. We've got these people identified as living in the land during the time of the conquest. These are those who are to be driven out. We've talked about the name Canaanite in times gone by. I'm not going to belabor that particular point. We've talked about the Hittites, who they were in our charts. I don't want to belabor that point either. I do want to make this observation on this chart because I want to get to some other things. But when we talk about the Jebusites, their stronghold was the city of Jerusalem. And who took it away from them? David did, and it was called then the City of David after that, as we know in our Old Testament study. This proved to be a particularly difficult people to get out for a variety of reasons, strategic location, the hill country, and so forth and so on. But this depicts Joshua coming in and leading the Israelite army to take the land that God promised to give unto Abraham. By the way, this particular chart we're going to come back to periodically as we talk about the conquest. But living in the land, we've talked about those who were giants who lived in the land and how that the Israelites had killed Og and took his territory. You can read about his bedstead of 13 feet long and 6 feet wide, just to get an indication of how big these folks were. We know that the spies in Numbers chapter 13, when they went in to spy out the land, it was these big people that scared them to death. They said, "We are like grasshoppers in their eyes, and in our eyes we appear as grasshoppers." But God had promised, and here's where we talk about the unbelief of the people, God had promised to drive these big people out. You see, size don't mean everything, does it? God could drive them out and would so do. And, of course, these big people, we know that Goliath was one that's described as a giant. He was 9.5 feet tall, and the Israelites were scared to death of him because of his size. But young David was not afraid of him because he said, "God will deliver him into my hand." And that was the argument that Joshua and Caleb had made. God has removed their defenses. God will deliver them into our hand. So though there were big people in the land, that did not defeat what God promised. The people themselves, through unbelief, would not go in and take the land. Now this gets us, Randy, to the points that I'm anxious to talk about. And that is the going in to the land of conquest to conquer the land. Turn in your Bibles, all of you, to Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2. Ken, you feel like reading some for me? In Joshua chapter 2, as was not only wise to do, but the expected procedure, no doubt, of a military man, Joshua sends in spies to spy out the first of the cities to be conquered, the city of Jericho. Would you read for me verses 1 through 7, please? All right, look what we found. Joshua sends in the spies. They go to the house of Rahab, Rahab the harlot. Now, I know there's lots of questions that may be raised in your mind about the character of this woman. There may be questions in your mind about the lie that she told. Yes, they were here, but they've gone. No, she had hidden them. Those questions I don't aim to make much effort to try to answer. They're irrelevant, particularly to our study, because what this woman did know is she knew what God did. She knew who God was. And there's no evidence that Rahab continued the practice that had formerly characterized her life. If you'll note in verse 8, it tells us, well, before I get to that, Rahab is mentioned in James chapter 2 as a great character of faith. She believed God, and she hid the spies. James chapter 2, you can read that beginning about verse 24, 25, I believe it is, of James chapter 2. And her faith is listed there right along with Abraham's faith to illustrate the kind of saving faith that we must have. Now, we know that faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the Word of God, which tells us Rahab knew something. What did she know? Let's begin reading in verse 9. Well, verse 8. And before they were laid down, she came up unto them upon the roof, and she said unto them, I know, look at that, I know that Jehovah hath given you the land, and that the fear of you is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how Jehovah dried up the water of the Red Sea before you, and when you came, or when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, unto Sihon and to Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. Now, we could talk about what happened to the Amorites and know that that's in more recent history. Yes, Rahab has heard about that. But the drying up of the waters of the Red Sea, how long ago has that been? 40 years. And Rahab's heard about that too. Now, I don't know how old this woman is. Text doesn't tell us. But Rahab's heard some things about God. And she's seen enough evidence to believe that Jericho is in trouble. Do you see that? Look, if you will, please, at verse 11. And as soon as we had heard it in our hearts, or heard it, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more spirit in any man because of you. For Jehovah your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Now, let's raise the question. Rahab hides the spies. She knows who they are, don't she? She's heard some things about God. Does she believe what she's heard? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Her and the rest of the inhabitants of Jericho, it tells us, our hearts did melt. We know what He's done. He's God of heaven. He's God of earth beneath. Now, having said that, she has a pretty good understanding of who God is and what His power is. And she So she hides the spies. What does she ask in return? Spare my family. Spare my family. Now, the text tells us in verse 15 that she let them down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the side of the wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. That gives us a whole lot of information besides just the particulars of what Rahab did for these spies. It tells us somewhat of the city of Jericho. The city of Jericho was well fortified, a tremendous wall around the city, big enough for people's houses to be built on it. Now, one of the things that we did note that the spies reported in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, as we read of that incident, when the spies came in and saw the land, what did they see that was different about the land of Canaan from what they had seen in Egypt before? Fortified cities, walls around the cities. Now that tells us somewhat of the government of these two different lands. In Egypt, we have a united government ruled over by a king. The land of Egypt ruled by one king, all right, called Pharaoh. That was the title, as it were. Now, we've talked about how many and so forth. That's beside our point. But in the land of Canaan, we've got city-states. Now, again, my understanding of that is that a man might become exceeding powerful and he would establish a city and build a wall around it, and the extent of his authority would reach as far as the land that he could control. And then if that was threatened, those who were the inhabitants under his authority would run inside the city. They would close the gates. Now, one of the things that is a great hazard with that is how much stuff can you put inside the city? Because eventually you're going to get hungry. And one of the tactics of ancient armies was to besiege the city, throw a ring around it with your army. Now that presents a problem for you. How long can you support your army outside their walls to just sit there? So we've got a wait and see thing going on. But often cities, ancient cities that were walled like this, we think that germ warfare is some new thing that we've invented. I've read reports where that they would catapult dead bodies, diseased bodies into the cities, inside the walls, where they would contaminate the health of the people and hasten the starvation process with disease and often cut off water supplies and things like that. And we're going to notice some of this when we talk about the city of Jericho being shut up. None went out, none came in. And so this is how the Israelite army, one of the things that they employed to conquer the city of Jericho. And, of course, we're going to eventually, down the pike several years, we'll probably talk about the conquering of the city of Babylon, how that the river Euphrates flowed through the city of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar thought that this would be a great plus on his defense of the city, and the king of the Persians decided to just reroute the Euphrates city, the Euphrates River around the city. And then he had this great highway called the Euphrates Riverbed to just march his army right into the middle of the city. And of course, there are advantages, I guess, to walls around a city, but there are also disadvantages.
We need to realize that they've never seen the likes of this before. All
all of a sudden, here's an army of 600,000 people that are ready to attack these cities who may have armies in the small hundreds at the best. You know, you see when they went out to attack Ai, you know, what, 3,000.
3,000. No, oh no, no, not equipped like armies are today. Some of you might enjoy discussing why we don't have walled cities anymore and what was a major element in doing away with walled cities. Just throw this out for information's sake. It was the invention of gunpowder because they could blow a wall up, but be that as it may. The city of Jericho lay right in the way and had to be conquered, so it's in line to be conquered. Now, Rahab, she spared the spies. Now, when the Israelites came into the city of Jericho, how did they know which house was Rahab's? Had the red or the scarlet cord to identify her house so that her house would not be destroyed. Now, when these spies come into the land, well, are we out of time, Chris? Oh, well, in that case, turn to Joshua chapter 3. Joshua chapter 3. I want to begin in Joshua chapter 3 next time because Joshua chapter 3 begins the preparation to cross the Jordan River to go into the promised land and to conquer the land, beginning with the city of Jericho. And I want to talk with you in particular in Joshua chapter 3 and Joshua chapter 4 regarding the preparations being made, but what occurred after they crossed the Jordan River in the latter part of chapter 4. So please read into the book of Joshua in preparation for our study Wednesday night. Okay? All right, we'll stop.